One of my fondest memories growing up was a Halloween night when I was about 13 years old. My dad coming in to wake me up at 11:30 at night on Halloween night. He told me he wanted me to watch a movie with him. A movie that he admitted that as an adult scared the living hell out of him. But it was a special midnight showing on Channel 32 WFLD-TV in Chicago of George Romero's classic, The Night of the Living Dead. Just the title alone was enough to send shivers up my spine. I watched that movie, and thanks to my father, I have needed therapy for the last 40-some years. That movie freaked me out to no end. Nightmares for years. I don't blame my father. I would have seen it eventually anyway, and then I followed it up all on my own with Day of the Dead, Dawn of the Dead, all of the dead movies I could get my hands on. I was fascinated by the zombie culture and ideas. I loved the movies. I just anything I could absorb myself into with the concept of zombies and what was all involved in the story. I was even missing all the social subtext of the Romero movies at the time because I was young, but I enjoyed them and was terrified. But I could never put my finger on what it was about this that was so terrifying. These slow-moving, ambling beasts that were flesh hungry. Why were they so terrifying to me? I mean, obviously, they moved slowly, at least the old ones did. You could zip around them pretty quickly if you were thinking straight. But as I've grown up in my life, I've started to realize that was the most terrifying, and that's part of what most of us are terrified of. It's not the unseen enemies. It's the ones right next to us. It's our friends and our family, our neighbors, our coworkers. It could be anyone, and you don't know where it's coming from. And that isolationist feel of watching the zombie movies is what's stuck with me ever since. And like many of you who write into me and ask for my favorite movie thoughts and what new movie should I suggest or recommend, I've always said The Night of the Living Dead is by far one of my absolute favorite movie trilogies, although I know it turned into a quintilogy, whatever you want to call it at this point. There's been so many iterations of it, but I love that. It's such an interesting storyline. And then things like The Walking Dead coming out and Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies. You start looking at the way that they were able to incorporate these walking, feasting creatures into all aspects of pop culture. And why are we still so fascinated by it? Well, our guest is here to chat with us about this tonight. Her new book is called Going Viral, Zombies, Viruses, and the End of the World. Dahlia Schweitzer is our guest. She'll be here in just a bit to talk to us about this. She's a pop culture critic and acclaimed writer on film, television, music, gender, identity, and everything in between. She's the author of several books, including Cindy Sherman's Office Killer, Another Kind of Monster. And as I said, her new book, Going Viral, Zombies, Viruses, and the End of the World, is published by Rutgers. It's available and in stores right now. As a matter of fact, if you go to darknessradio.com and click on the Killer Deals link, we will have a link up for that book so that you can find it and all of the great books you hear on Coast to Coast AM and on my show, Darkness Radio. So go check that out, darknessradio.com. Click on that Killer Deals link to find amazing books on all aspects of the strange and unusual. When we come back, we'll talk about the outbreak narratives that have proliferated for the last quarter century and how they've now reached epidemic proportions. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Dahlia Schweitzer is our guest for the remainder of the show. We'll open up phone lines next hour. Going Viral, Zombies, Viruses, and the End of the World. Dahlia, welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, and thanks for opening with Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, man. Is there a movie that could get into your head? You know what was really fascinating to me about this? Now, remember, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, so I was a kid of color, watching color movies, color TV shows, these black and white shows. What? So when my dad first showed it to me and I see the car driving down, it's in black and white, I started rolling my eyes thinking I was in for like the Andy Griffith of horror movies. And that movie, the stark contrast of those colors, the idea behind it, it freaked me out more than any movie I could ever remember until probably my adulthood. Did that have the same kind of impact on you?
You know what's funny is the movie that I saw that freaked me out for years after was actually The Shining.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and which I think I saw when I was like, also, yeah, whatever it was too young. and Night of the Living Dead, I saw, like, I wasn't as vulnerable, perhaps, as you might have been when your dad showed it to you. So I was a little more protected. But I think it's interesting because I don't know if you're aware, it's the 50th anniversary of Night of the Living Dead this year.
Oh, I'm aware.
And it's kind of crazy the impact that this tiny little movie made on this shoestring budget continues to have.
I had the great luxury of meeting George Romero about,
oh, wow.
Yeah, about 10 years ago. I was here in Minnesota doing something at work, and one of my buddies from Chicago called up and said, hey, George Romero is going to be in Chicago tonight doing a screening of Night of the Living Dead. And I called my wife, told her, she got my bag packed. I flew home, grabbed my stuff, and made it out to Chicago in time for the screening, but I missed the Q&A. I was so brokenhearted. Aww. I went outside for a break, and standing there with nobody around him, just smoking a cigarette, is George Romero.
Wow. And
I walked up to him, and I'm like, Mr. Romero. He's like, yeah, hey, how are you? And we just sat there and shot the breeze. And I, you know, the most heartbreaking thing I've ever heard in my life, though, coming from an entertainer, I told him at this point, the remake of Dawn of the Dead had come out. And I said, so, what are we going to see next? Are we going to see a crappy remake of Day of the Dead, or are we going to see a brand new George Romero Dead movie? And he looked me in the eyes and he said, you know, they already made a remake of Day of the Dead. It'll be coming out. And he said, here's the kicker, Dave. I asked for $8 million to create a brand new movie, and they wouldn't give me the money and wouldn't greenlight it, but they greenlighted a remake of Day of the Dead for $18 million or some crazy amount. And he said,
oh my
so
God.
They'll remake George Romero movies for $18 to $20 million, but they won't give George Romero money to make a new movie. And he just shook his head. Yeah, it was unbelievable. Luckily, he got Land of the Dead and then Diary of the Dead, so we did get to see the progression of the story fleshed out a little bit further. But
right.
That was astounding. And just to get the chance to stand there and talk to him and hear his insights on the zombie culture and what he thought of how things were exploding with the zombie movies and that whole realm was really kind of interesting to pick his brain for a little bit. But just what an interesting and nice man George Romero was.
I wish I could have been a fly on the wall for that conversation.
Very nice guy. And he posed for pictures and signed autographs and was just very, very gregarious when it came to that. Every time I bumped into him at different events, he turned out to be that same guy every time. He's kind of the Stan Lee of the horror movies.
That's the impression that I've got too. Yeah.
Yeah, he is. He's
almost
just like
nice
sweet and loving it. Yep, exactly. And here you've got something that comes out. And how heartbreaking was it too for listeners that don't know this? This guy, that movie is how much do you think it's probably made through 50 years of being out there now?
It's actually made a ton of money, but I wonder how much of it he's gotten. Do you know?
Nothing.
Nothing? Really?
No. We got a little bit of money to make the movie up front, and they originally had titled the movie Night of the Flesh Eaters. And at the last minute, they changed the production title, and they forgot when they made it Night of the Living Dead to put that little R in the circle, the little copyright symbol on there to trademark
it.
Yes. And
oh
that
my God, I did
one
not know
mistake.
That.
Yeah, that one mistake cost him years of all the money coming in from that movie. So that's why he ended up doing that weak remake with Tom Savini behind the helm back in, I want to say, late 80s, early 90s when that came out.
Wow, because I know that the movie earned $30 million.
Right.
And that was, of course, way back then. So now that ends up being, you know, over $200 million. And so he didn't see any of that?
No, he said, and it was great, too. What, the movie cost like $118,000 to make.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And went on to do that, and he never got the comeuppance for that. It was always cheated out of him.
Wow.
And that's why it was, that's why you could go into every place and see knockoff copies of the movie, because there was no trademark on it. There was nothing that protected it in any way, shape, or form. So,
wow, that's really sad.
Yeah, it definitely was. But that was the whole thing. And, you know, like I said, as an adult, I started to look at this dolly, and I realized, to me, what made it so terrifying was it was your loved one. It was your kid. It was your neighbor. It was your brother. It was your wife.
Yes.
That made it so impactful, and why we were so terrified of it. Because how would you react? We all think now in this culture and today, well, you put a bullet in its head and you walk away. That's not your wife, your kid, or your relative anymore. But I don't know that any one of us would have that instinct naturally. This is still somebody that you loved, and is there a chance they could come back? Is there still some taste of humanity in this person?
Well, I mean, I think that's the question that's kind of lurking at the heart of so many of these narratives. I mean, in The Walking Dead, over and over again, it's like, you know, someone's sister gets turned, and then it's like, what do you do? And you have to shoot her, and it's like, but maybe she won't turn into a zombie. And in Dawn of the Dead, the same thing, where it's like, you know, it's like that inevitable, like, oh my God, the person got scratched. What are we going to do? It's just a matter of time, but maybe they won't. And no, I mean, I think over and over again, and I think it's interesting, for instance, that like the first zombie that you see in The Walking Dead is a small blonde child. Because that's like even more disturbing, right? The idea of this like cute blonde girl who otherwise you would of course never fear at all,
right,
wearing this little like pink bathrobe, you know, and it's like, you, when Rick first sees her, he thinks like, he's like, oh, I'm gonna help her, and then she turns around and you're just like aghast as her, you know, like half eaten face. And then in the Dawn of the Dead remake, the first person you see turning into a zombie is again the like cute blonde girl from next door. So I think there's definitely kind of playing on it. And even Night of the Living Dead, there's that horrific scene where the kid starts to eat her parents. You know, so I think they definitely know. It's like, it's not only that it's like someone that you're related to, but when it's like a child. In the pilot episode of The Strain, also the first zombie, vampire, whatever you want to call them, is also a little girl who goes home to her daddy. So I think it's interesting that you keep seeing these children who are turned, because that's like, oh my God.
And I think what's been really interesting to me regarding the zombie genre of movies is the way that they've tried to make different aspects of the story and the humanity and how we deal with these things. For everything from the, you know, what happened in Night of the Living Dead? Was it the asteroid? Was it space debris? Was it a viral infection? Was it a biological weapon? There was really no specific answer, which they've also kind of alluded to in the Walking Dead series, right? Giving you the conscious deal that it could be anything that causes this. And then you start looking at the new 28 days later, where it's more like a virus. It's like a rage virus that overtakes who we are.
Well, I know one of the things that I talk about in my book is that you have these sort of, it's like the zombie narrative comes in like you have version 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0, right? And so version 1.0 is the one that has to do with like that came out of Haiti and like the voodoo master. And right, that's where it has almost like these kind of religious overtones where it's kind of like black magic and all that stuff. And then the Romero wave, which came in sort of like the 60s and 70s, is, as you're right, it's like it's never fully explained. It's implied that it's coming from radiation from outer space, perhaps speaking to our fears of like a nuclear bomb or whatever. But then starting with the Resident Evil video game and then 28 days later in 2002, that's when the infection zombie kind of really kicks off. And then you have narrative after narrative after narrative. I mean, it's like now it's like all the zombies are infections, right? And you have the different versions. I mean, you have like Zombieland, you have the TV show iZombie, you have The Walking Dead, where it's never explained, as you said, it's never explained where the virus comes from, but it's clarified that it is a virus, right? And it's something that is in everybody, and it's just a matter of time until you turn into a zombie. So now it's really fusing our fears of infection. And I think you're absolutely right that it's also tapping into this fear that it's someone that you know, someone that you think you can trust, and then suddenly they're the ones that are going to kill you.
And especially with the way people look at, you know, the connectivity of humanity. And that's what I think Romero was really good at with the kind of social commentary below his movies. Not only did you have the kind of underlying aspect of this kind of isolationist, you're all trapped together. What are you going to do? Who's going to rise to the top? And look, you've got the one aggressor who's just a jerk, and you kind of want him dead halfway through the movie, right? Harry in Night of the Living Dead. But it turns out he was right.
Yeah.
He was the guy. And now they're kind of giving you that same vibe on The Walking Dead between the big bad of the last few seasons with Negan. And now you're starting to realize that maybe his way is a better way than, than the heroes. And that's, I think, an intriguing aspect. But I wish Romero would have been able to crack out one more with our current atmosphere, because I got to tell you, we are right now, I think, the closest to the zombie atmosphere that's ever existed. And if you think I'm kidding, just look on the streets, people just ambling, bumping into each other, so addicted to their social media and telephones that they can't move. They can't make, they can't go to the bathroom without it. They can't sit at a meal. They sit at a table, not talking to one another, communicating, but mumble. It is such, I mean, that's become who we are.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, and that's just one aspect of it, but I feel like also, you know, it's, you can't open up a newspaper without reading about like environmental catastrophe, right? It's like the polar ice caps are melting, you know, we're having more and more disasters. I mean, this summer you had Puerto Rico, there were hurricanes everywhere. The economy seems to be melting down kind of across the world. You've got Brexit going on. Nobody knows what's happening. Climate change. I mean, it's like, I feel like during the Cold War, people were afraid of a nuclear bomb kind of bringing about the end of the world.
Right.
And now it seems like there are 20 things on any given day that could bring about the end of the world. You know, so I think you're absolutely right that we see, and then, you know, we have things like 9/11 where it's like, oh my God, we're living through one of these movies.
Right. And here we are, but it's, I mean, in a different way too, right? It's this weird moment, and I've talked about it as kind of the breakdown of socialization and humanity, because in one fell stroke, we came up with a device and an ability to communicate faster than we've ever been able to communicate before. And we could communicate from one end of the world to another in a matter of seconds. Yet we're probably now more polarized and distant from real humanity than we've ever been before because of that addiction. Isn't that a weird twist of fate? That something that brought us together is part of what's driving us apart, which is what the underlying narrative of most of these stories has always been about.
Yeah. And it's interesting because one of the things that first got me thinking about exactly what you're saying is you mentioned my previous book, which is about the movie Office Killer. And what Office Killer kind of, it's set in 1997, which it's kind of hard to believe, but that's when email was really taking off and the idea of like working from home, and you could kind of downsize. And so people were, you know, like you could work from home half the time and all that stuff. And that's, I think, when you really started to deal with this notion where it was like we didn't all have to be in the same place at the same time to communicate.
Right.
And that's what that movie really gets at, right, is this notion of the disappearing bodies and like people aren't in the office and you're not sure why they aren't in the office, because are they dead or are they telecommuting? And I think, and that's just kind of intensified, and you have that brilliant opening sequence in Shaun of the Dead, which really plays on that, where it's like, who's a zombie and who's not a zombie? Because we kind of are all already zombies now, you know, as you said, walking down the street, not interacting, looking at our phones, totally checked out.
Well, Dahlia, let's take a break. We'll continue having some fun talking about this. I also want to hear some of your picks for favorite zombie movies for our listeners. We'll do that and more when we return on Coast to Coast AM. There is a production company right now seeking your stories. Have you ever been in a haunted hospital as an employee? Doctor, nurse, anesthesiologist, janitor, security, or as a patient? Have you had a paranormal experience? I did. A very profound, creepy, weird experience. I'm going to be flying out to Toronto to film my story for that upcoming series. They'd like you to join them. You can send me an email, dave@darknessradio.com. Tell me about your story and include your phone number and email address. I will forward it on to the production company. And if they're interested, they will be reaching out to you for more information. Again, if you've had a haunting experience in a hospital, hospice, old folks home, whatever you want to look at, any one of those kind of hospital environments, email me, dave@darknessradio.com, with your contact information. And I will forward that information and your story on to the producers, and hopefully they'll give you a call and you'll be a part of that upcoming series. But you got to be willing to share your story. It has to be your story. Don't be handling off a secondhand story. This has got to be your own personal experience, and the freakier and weirder, the better. That's what they're looking for. And speaking of freaky and weird, check out my radio show, Beyond the Darkness. You can find that at darknessradio.com. where every week we explore the strange and unusual, along with my co-host and producer, Tim Dennis. We bring you the best in paranormal talk radio. Stay tuned. We'll talk about some of our favorite zombie movies. We'll talk about outbreaks and Ebola, the swine flu, the bird flu, all of these diseases that are touted in the news as doomsday apocalyptic moments that have yet to come to fruition. Why does the media pound this fear through our heads so much? We'll talk with our guest, Dahlia Schweitzer, when we return on Coast to Coast AM. We're back. Dahlia Schweitzer, our guest this evening. Her book, Going Viral, Zombies, Viruses, and the End of the World. We mentioned a bunch of cool zombie movies. Shaun of the Dead, you brought up. I love that one. That's a fantastic flick, and I thought so beautifully done with the right mix of humor and frights and just a great relationship buddy movie that takes a strange turn. Night of the Living Dead, of course, makes my list. I actually like the remake of Dawn of the Dead better than the original. And then two kind of off-key horror movie, zombie movies that don't seem to get much play. I really loved Fido, starring Billy Connolly. And then I'm curious what your thoughts are, Dahlia, on the Maggie with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Did you see that one?
You know, I still haven't seen that one. Should I put it on my list?
Yeah, I just, again, I like when they take something outside the box.
Oh, and, totally.
And that's what they did with Maggie to me. It's a slower movie. I think it's one of Arnold's first movies after he gave up the zombiehood of being a governor and got back into the living world. But it's, I thought, a really impactful story, and it's, I thought it was beautifully shot, and just, it was different, and I liked that aspect of it. When you're looking at the genre of zombie films, which one stands out to you the most?
You know, it's funny because I was going to tell you the remake of Dawn of the Dead, and I was worried that you were going to, you know, say George Romero was rolling over in his grave. But I do really like the remake of Dawn of the Dead. And
well, thankfully, thankfully he was still alive when that came out, but I'm sure he was still rolling his eyes.
And I really enjoy the TV show iZombie.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of fits your, have you ever watched it?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so it kind of fits your criteria of, you know, like let's take the zombie narrative outside of the box and do something a little different with it. And I also really enjoy The Strain, and I know that that's not a conventional zombie narrative. It's kind of this really interesting fusion of zombie and vampire, but again, it's taking the sort of the traditional zombie narrative and reinventing it a little bit. Have you ever watched that?
I have not seen The Strain. See, I heard it was more of a vampire thing, and I kind of burned out with the vampire genre. I don't know why vampires, you know, I've always loved vampires, and I love a good story, but, you know, that one just didn't appeal to me from the commercials.
No, and I think they did a weird job marketing it, and I think it also, it took a little bit of time to kind of find its rhythm, and it's definitely very campy. So you have to be into that. But I've been, you know, I kind of stuck with it because I felt like, okay, I need to stick with it for the book and all that. But it's it's like every season they really sort of go like one layer deeper. And the latest season is really fascinating because they sort of, so you have the zombie vampires. So basically they're zombies, but the difference is they're all connected by their mind to like the master. And so in that respect, it's almost kind of like the Haitian voodoo, you know, where the zombies are all like minions that belong to the master. But then you have this other, all these other kind of layers that are going on, and it's making a really interesting statement about sort of fascism and like too much control and Nazism and concentration camps. And it's like, there's just a lot happening, and it's very smart, but it is also kind of over the top. So you have to be able to appreciate that. And it might be like, if you're more of a Walking Dead person, you might not be into the strain.
No, that's more of is it more of kind of a utopian or dystopian maybe version of these kind of storylines?
It's very dystopian. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So basically the premise is, it is that New York City gets taken over by these zombie vampires, and they really are like zombies, except that they're all controlled by this master. But then, spoiler, you know, so they take over New York and they start taking over more and more of the U.S. And then the world becomes this kind of dystopian that's being controlled by them. And then the humans are basically just being used for their blood, because the zombie vampires feed off the blood. So it's very creepy and dark, but it's also very interesting, and it's fun. And I like the gory gruesomeness. And so I don't think it's the kind of thing where it's going to give anybody actual nightmares.
Right.
But it'll make you think, you know, like it stays with you.
Do you know what movie kind of falls into the zombie genre that never, I don't think, gets the attention that it should? Is the original and the remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh, totally, yes.
Right, because you've got the idea that when you sleep, these pods are kind of rebuilding your entire cellular structure and absorbing what you were, who you were, but leaving you kind of an emotionless shell. So you're just, these creatures are just kind of ambling around afterwards once they've drained you of what made you human. And now you're just kind of a hollow replicant, a clone without the soul.
You should see, and it's weird because I feel like no one I know watched it, and it got very little publicity, but there was a TV show on CBS that was called Brain Dead, like 2 years ago, maybe. Did you hear about it?
You know, it sounds familiar, and maybe if you start to describe it, it'll pop back into mind, but...
The advertising campaign was really gimmicky, and it didn't look that great. And the only reason why I gave it a chance is because it was made by the same people that made The Good Wife. And I really loved The Good Wife, and I was just sort of curious to see, like, hey, what are they doing? And the show is off the wall, and it's set in D.C., and the premise is that aliens are sending these little bugs that, like, they're like little ants, and they crawl into people's ears and they take over their brain. So it's very much Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And then similarly, the idea is when the aliens take over the brains of these people, nobody notices. And the joke is that sort of like, you know, politicians are off the wall anyway. So
right.
It's like, it's not a stretch to have them be really, really off the wall. So aliens are taking over their brains because aliens have this plan to kind of take over the world or the U.S. I can't remember the scope of it. But it ends up being this kind of like dark social satire about D.C.
You know, the problem is that movie came out 2 years too early, I think, or that TV series.
The TV series, yeah, I think.
I wonder how that would be received now with the current climate and political kind of division bell that's going on in the country, how they would look at that series, if it would be more well-received, at least by half the country.
Well, it's interesting because I think it might also have the same problem that House of Cards kind of fell into, where 10 years ago, this would have seemed, you know, wow, what a crazy premise. And now the stuff that's happening in real life is actually crazier. So
yeah, very well could be.
I don't know. I think it was an odd show to be on CBS. And I don't know what kind of deal was made and if they told, you know, Robert and Michelle King, if you finish The Good Wife, you can do whatever you want after. And then maybe they knew they were only going to get a season of it. The nice thing is that they must have known that they were only going to get a season early enough that it wraps up. So you feel like you're watching kind of this complete story and you're not left at the end with this like odd cliffhanger. So I strongly recommend, I think it's on Amazon Prime or something maybe. If you can just watch Brain Dead, I think you would love it because it really is a sort of invasion of the body snatchers for the 21st century.
Very cool. I will check that out. Do you think that the popularity of shows like Walking Dead, I mean, here you're into it, you know, a lot of seasons, and the original premise was, of course, the zombie outbreak and how would we deal with it and how do we get along with one another? And it's certainly kind of the zombies seem to be more of a background storyline. At least halfway through the series, they became the least of our worries. It became more about how we treat one another and how do we deal in this new world with this new life and new regime. Do you think that's what keeps it kind of relevant is now we communicate and it's how, which side do we come down on? Are we the governor? Are we the, you know, the saviors? Are we Negan? Are we Rick and his traveling group of merry people? You know, I mean, I'm not sure why the popularity is still so big for a show like that, unless it's just because it is an evolutionary process.
I do think that it's interesting to wonder, and I know this is one of the questions that sort of, you know, prompted my book in the first place, is I don't really consider The Walking Dead to be a necessarily fun show to watch. I mean, it has its moments, but it's kind of, you know, it can be depressing and disturbing and grim. And, you know, it doesn't have that sort of like escapism thrill that you might get from like Dawn of the Dead or something like that, or playing a video game where you're shooting zombies or whatever. But I think the Walking Dead is this sort of sobering commentary. And I think you're totally right that every season it's almost like a different exploration of what do we need to do to survive, you know, and do we need, I mean, the governor might have been an awful person, but he was also running a well-oiled machine. So it's kind of like, you know, and then Rick has his moments where he's great, but then Rick also has his moments where other people have to step in and they're like, Rick, dude, you're not handling this well.
Right.
You know, so I think there is a lot of kind of question of like, well, what is the right way? You know, and then I remember all the seasons kind of blur in my head, but the one where Carol had to kill the kids because they were sick and she didn't want it to spread. And then Rick got mad at her because she killed the kids.
Well, yeah, she killed a few different people, right? It was the kids. It was T-Dog. Oh, gosh, who was the other guy? Anyway, it was one of the other characters' girlfriends, I think, that she had to put down.
Yeah, she's definitely done it. Yeah, there was a time where she killed these, like, she went off on her own. She sort of went rogue because the infection was spreading in the prison. And so she kind of took it upon herself to kill these people. And then Rick was very mad at her and it was kind of like, but did Carol really do anything wrong? You know, and I think that's one of the really interesting questions in a lot of these narratives is it's like, what do you need to do to save people? You know, and yes, right. Should you kill two people if it means you get to save 20? And who gets to decide, you know, what that equation is? And yes, you know, who gives you permission to kill those two people? And I know the TV show, The Last Ship, also kind of looks at that question of like whose life is worth saving.
Well, and we've got the aspect too of these stories, right? That you know, when it comes down to it, are we becoming the monsters? There was a very there was a very interesting episode when Rick was kind of pushed to the limit and his reaction was to bite the throat out of a guy, right? He became the zombie. And in one of the more recent episodes, you know, we're so used to watching the zombies vivisect the humans and tear them to shreds. And in one of the recent ones, without giving away too much, one of the living guys puts his hand inside another living person and to stop them, kind of disembowels them right there on the spot.
Right.
And, you know, all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait a minute. The line now between who the monsters are is really blurred. And I think that's part of what makes the story compelling. And, you know, it is a perspective of, you know, even in the villain's world, to the villain, he's the hero of his own story. They all think they've got the best idea for keeping people alive and continuing, no matter how gruesome it is. You look at their group, they're probably some of the most inhumane. Our heroic group that we're all rooting for are probably some of the most inhumane of the humans that still exist out there.
I mean, I think that's the question at the heart of so many of these, is it's like, on one hand, if there is this sort of, you know, breakdown in social order, post-apocalypse, et cetera, do you become, is it romanticized, you know, where you become a better version of yourself because you're liberated from the chains of capitalism or whatever? Or do you become a monster? You know, do you become a worse version of yourself? The film Blindness really looks at that. It doesn't have zombies per se, but it's the film where people go blind and then they get quarantined. Have you seen it?
I have not. No, I'm hanging on what you're telling me about it, though.
It's based on a book, and it's a really interesting movie that, again, it's not cheerful, but it provides this really interesting statement on sort of like human nature. And it's set in just an urban area, right? You're not told exactly what city you're in. And people slowly start to go blind, except that instead of the world becoming black, the world goes white. But the virus that spreads is somehow taking away your eyesight. And nobody knows what it is, and nobody knows how to stop it. And so, of course, again, social order breaks down really quickly. And all the people who have gone blind are being locked up because there's, again, this notion that if we just lock up all the sick people, we'll manage to confine the illness among the sick people, which never really works. And then the people are locked up and basically imprisoned. And then, of course, social order collapses because there's not enough food, there's not enough supplies. The men start raping the women, and it's just like this complete breakdown of the social order. And again, and there are no zombies there, right? It's like the literal monsters are the humans. So I think that question is at the root of all of these stories. I mean, and even in the Dawn of the Dead remake, you know, you have the sort of the mall security who are acting like total jerks and become a threat temporarily.
Well, we're up against the top of the hour. When we come back, why do you think movies and the TV shows and books about these viral outbreaks and end of the world are so popular? Why are we so drawn to this dark aspect of who we are and where we may end up? We'll talk about that. We'll take your calls and your emails. Shoot them to me at dave@darknessradio.com. You're listening to the best in overnight talk radio. For George Norrie, I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM.